with the three owners.
Thank you all for joining us today. The attendance is fantastic, much greater than I was hoping, than I was expecting, and it's wonderful. I would like to start with thank yous first to the Senior Center for hosting this event today. I also want to thank Franklin TV, who's here recording this event. In addition, we very much appreciate those who helped to publicize the event, which include Alan Earls with the Franklin Observer, Steve Sherlock with Franklin Matters, and he is here as well, and Corey Shea, who put it in the Cultural District Newsletter. I am Gino Colucci, President of the Quattro e Rui Lodge of the Sons and Daughters of Italy. Briefly, this lodge was established almost 100 years ago. In fact, we'll be celebrating our 100th anniversary next spring. We have some exciting events planned, including an author speaker about Italian immigrant experiences, an exhibit at the Franklin Historical Museum, and other events that are still in the planning stages. Originally, the primary mission of this organization was to help immigrants become acclimated to the new environment. It was both a networking and social organization. Now we're mostly social while promoting Italian and Italian-American culture. We're very proud to be sponsoring today's event. Each panelist was given a list of questions ahead of time, primarily to stimulate their memories and help guide the discussion. We don't need this to be a question and answer session, but rather a more informal discussion that addresses some or all of the topics on the list. Our panelists include, starting from my far right, Eddie Colacci, Phyllis Pizzella, Antonio Cence, Al Pizzi, and Mike Narducci. I would like to begin by asking each panelist to state their name and the year they came to America and their age at that time, starting with Eddie. Could you please hand Eddie a microphone and turn it on? You need to share those mics.
It's on, Eddie.
My name is Edward Colacci. I came to this country in 1947. Anything else?
And how old were you at that time?
At that time, I was 12 and a half. Came to this country not knowing any English at all, except for a few bad words.
Okay, pass it on.
My name is Phyllis Pozzella, used to be Zuffadelli, and I came in 1963. I was 17 years old. Like Eddie says, not knowing one word of English.
Good afternoon. My name is Antonio Cence. I came December 11, 1964, and I come from a small town named San Donato. Okay.
Thank you, Tony. My name is Al Pizzi, and to state my name is a task. My full name is Alessandro Pizzi. My Irish aunt registered me at the Gleaming New Parmenter School in 1953 as Alexander Pizzi because I was going to be Americanized, and I was pretty quickly.
Good afternoon. Oh boy. I came here in 1956. My brother bought me an ice cream, and I didn't like it. Imagine that. Me not liking ice cream. I live for ice cream. I knew no words whatsoever, but we got by. We learned a few.
Okay. First, pass one of the microphones down so that it's a little easier to share. And now let's talk about some of your memories of the town you came from in Italy. Starting with Eddie. And you can jump in. We want this to be more informal.
Okay, please do so anytime. Just no close to one person. I need to say for the audience, my hearing when I came from Italy, I thought I heard a pin drop. No, I cannot hear a cannon drop. So please have some patience. If I'm too loud, raise your hand. Or if I'm too soft, raise your hand. So please do that.
You have to use the other mic.
It's not working. Okay. Not working.
Use this one.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I, along with three others here, came from the same town in Italy. The name of the town is Santa Maria. Santa Maria is located in the almost center of Italy, in the middle of the mountains. The one that was facing us was called the Martese. Now we were, I would say, approximately 2.5 hours south of Rome and about 2 hours east of Naples. And those of you that know your history, we were close to the monastery, Monte Cassino. Now, I looked over, can I go on? I looked over some of our thoughts and ideas that we put down on a piece of paper. To me, perhaps the most important part, which is not here, is what made me become an immigrant? Why am I an immigrant? So bear with me for a while. My parents lived in a house, 4 rooms and a cellar. The cellar most of the time housed animals. The 4 rooms, 3 were bedrooms and 1 was a kitchen. In my mother's bedroom, my dad was here at that time. In my mother's bedroom was my mother, my brother, and I. In the other bedroom was my aunt, 5 girls, and the third bedroom was my grandmother. Now, where did we sleep? Well, wherever there's a spot, we put a blanket down.
Who was faster than
the chest,
bed?
On the floor, in the closet, and you name it. As long as it was a little comfortable. During the night, you want to go to the bathroom, you have to leave the house and go to the outhouse. And as a kid, I didn't want to do that. So sometimes I feel like I'm busting. Well, that's it. You want to go to the bathroom? You go to the outhouse. The town was a farm town. It was in the middle of nowhere. We were perhaps 100 years behind the times. We had nothing, but we were a very happy town. We didn't miss what we didn't have, and we didn't have anything. So you survived. You survived how? Well, you worked the land. You planted your wheat. You planted your corn, your potatoes, and so forth. If you had a good crop, you were lucky. If you didn't, then you depend mostly on your friends and the town for that 1 year. And the town was really a big family. So when it came time to bring in the harvest for wheat, people there would help you. And then in turn, you would help people. So it was a family. During the war, however, that changed a little bit. We weren't allowed to work the fields like we were. And so things became a little tight. Education, I went through the third grade, maybe part of the fourth. And I could see down the road, further education wasn't there for me. Down the road, what was there for me? The farm. I would be one of the farmers. And I would remember one time, I'd take out the sheep, and through my boyish fooling around, playing, I came home that night without any sheep. I lost them all. My mother wasn't too happy. So, after the war, the town was really overpopulated. And I mean overpopulated. You couldn't find a closet space in town to put somebody else in. So after the war, my dad was here. And our parents, like my in-laws, had the foresight of seeing down the road and saying, hey, I don't want that for my kids. I want a better life for them. Because things weren't getting any better, they were getting worse. A man would get married, and the custom was the wife would move in with him. So can you imagine a house full of women with a young boy and an adult woman moving in? It was all over the place. The woman would move in with her husband. My brother was lucky. My maternal grandmother had passed away. My maternal grandfather was by himself. He gets married, he moves in with my grandfather. So he left home. So my dad figured it's time to make a move. Leave everything behind. And I think it took a lot of courage for anybody to do that, pick up the family, lock, stock and barrel, one little you had, and leave the country. So we came here. Why? Well, my dad was living here. As a matter of fact, in the early 40s, he even lived in Franklin a little bit. Eventually, he ended up in Everett, room and boarding. So we came here, my mother and I, and we came by ship. Now, I get on the ship not knowing what was ahead. I never had a ball, a football, a baseball, you name it, in my hands, leave alone old one. And you know, you wouldn't know the difference between there and here. The lights in New York was beyond belief. You get close to New York and we stayed out overnight because they weren't ready to take us in. Everybody went home. Ellis Island and then New York. We stayed up all night watching the lights, the cars, the people. The city was alive all night, and so were we, watching this all night. We never saw that, not in our wildest dream. I never saw a black person. I didn't even know one existed until I got to New York, until I got on a ship. And I remember my mother saying to me, when we dock, I want you to stand over there. I'm going to stand next to this little black boy, and when your father waves, he's going to see me next to the boy. And that turned out to be very funny because she did that. In 1947, 12 and a half years old, first time I met my dad. I knew my dad existed. I never met him. I guess I was born 2-3 months after he left Italy. Then the war broke out and we lost all contact. So when now we're in this country, in New York, what's my biggest obstacle? Well, the biggest one was my language barrier. And it still is. If I get mad at people, you can notice the Italian kicked me in there. Okay? But I've learned to cope with it, and it's still there, and it still bothers me, and that was my biggest problem throughout my school career. And it still is. So I guess we moved to Everett. My dad had nothing. That was nothing new for him, because in Italy, he has less than nothing. And so he had to rent a house, buy the bed, buy the kitchen table, toilet paper, forks, knife, you name it. He worked 2 jobs. I worked during the winter, going around shoveling driveway. That's unheard of today. I do a driveway, I was lucky to get 50 cents. I would work with a cabinet maker, sanding cabinets all day for 50 cents. And I was pleased to get it, believe me. I never saw 50 cents in my life. Now I get to school. My third day in Everett, I get to school. 12 and a half years old. A little bit on the tough side because, you know, you live through a war. And they put me in the fifth grade. I'm 12 and a half years old. I'm in with a class of fifth graders. I'm talking about misplacing somebody. There's a big horse in the fifth grade class. And we were with 6, 7, 8 in that building. Well, the upperclassmen, if I may use that word, is that they're quickly to pick you out. They're quickly to find out what your shortcomings are. Oh, you can't speak English, huh? You know, and they started to make fun of you. Well, I didn't know much, but I think I was smart enough to know these guys are making fun of me. Well, my second or third day in school, I figured this better come to an end. And so when they started, I go for it. I got beat up because about 3 or 4 of them, me. The other kids don't help, they just make a circle. So they left me alone though from then on. They left me alone. I went home, I didn't say a word because I knew if I went home, my Italian ruling of our family would have jumped in that home, so I kept my mouth shut. The following year, they put me 2 weeks in the sixth grade and then moved me to the seventh. You bring a kid today from another country, you put him in the Franklin school system, he or she will have all kinds of help. Reading specialist, math, or you name it. Whatever he or she needs, they'll get it. When I came, I got this much help. You're on your own. And this is why I had to straighten those boys out, because otherwise it's gonna be a long year in school. We moved to Franklin in 1952. My dad bought the local restaurant at that time, or he made it into a local restaurant called the Union Cafe. I went to Dean for 2 years, and I'm sorry I did that, to tell you the truth, because I should have gone to high school. I missed the reunions. You know, the kids go back every 5 years or whatever. I missed that. So I went to Dean. And there again, my parents wanted the best for me, that I was not going to get in Italy. I went to Northeastern. I graduated as an electrical engineer. And at that time, I had to go into service when I completed college. And I went into service and I was down in Fort Benning, Georgia, in a training outfit, and I did some adult teaching. And I liked teaching. It got to me. And so through, because of that, and because my dad was very ill, I had to stay around because he was bad. And I wrote to the superintendent of schools. I asked for a job because I only had about 3 months left. He sent me a contract. I never met him until I came home. He sent me a contract prior to that. And so I signed the contract and I stayed as a provisor. When I signed the contract, I had to promise that I would go to graduate school, summer school, take a couple courses and become certified. And so I became certified in teaching, math, science, certified in administration, and certified in guidance.
Okay.
And I spent 32 years.
I just want to interrupt for a second, just to note that Mr. Kalachi was my teacher, was my science teacher in, I think, seventh grade. And he was an excellent teacher. In the interest of time, why don't we move on to the next, to Phyllis next, to speak for a few minutes. Let everybody have a bit of a time to get part of their story out, and then we can have an interactive discussion. So Phyllis, why don't you go next?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, that's me. Well, I came the same town Eddie, Santa Maria de Molise. I was 17 when I came here. And it was hard. Worked in the farm. We didn't have anything. And at 8 years old, I used to deliver milk to the town. No shoes. My father used to make shoes out of bicycle tires. Yeah, exactly. And I used to rip them apart because
Scarpio.
And I didn't like them. I used to go outside and rip the damn thing off. And I used to say to my father, oh, they broke. And he used to say, well, go barefoot. When I used to go barefoot because I didn't like it. I didn't like wearing it. But we were on the farm from morning till night. As 8, 10 years old. Couldn't even buy an ice cream. Like Mark said, he likes ice cream. We had a feast in our town. May 1st, and we all walked around with friends, and I wanted $50, to buy an ice cream. My father said, oh, we don't have no money. We're allowed to go there, but we didn't have the money. But it was tough. It was tough. We came here in 1963. We're excited to come here. My grandfather lived here. My mother's dad, which my mother never knew her dad, like Eddie. My mother was, there were four of us. She was 40 years old when she met her dad. And was excited to meet him. But unfortunately, he had to rent a house in Washington Street. And he was, we would live down the cellar. It was awful. Was seven of us living in two bedrooms. And the morning I got up and I walked up the street, I didn't like it. I wanted to go back. I started crying. I told my parents, I want to go back. I don't want to live here because I didn't know the language. I didn't understand. I went uptown, I got lost. And I went to Union Street, I asked Mr. Pizzi there, I said, how do you, in Italian, you speak Italian? Yeah. He says, I want to go uptown. How do I get there? I'm lost. He walked me uptown. And I got a job on Tilly, Gino's grandmother. She got us a lot of clothes, secondhand clothes. We bought a house where my son is, Union Street. And me and my sister worked to, we helped my father pay for the house. And I worked two jobs at 17 years old. My first job was in Franklin Saxon Mill, dishcloth. I used to sew dishcloth. Well, all Italian, I couldn't learn English. Place shut down, I worked in Atalboro. Everybody was French. I couldn't learn English. And then I worked at the Union at night. So I worked two jobs to help out. But then, you know, I did it for 10 years. It was tough. It was tough to learn English. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for me. And my sister was 3. My brother was 8. My older sister, Pianine, she was 19. So, but the two went to school, college, whatever. But her and I, we never went to school. We just had to work. My father said, used to, his thing was, work doesn't kill anybody, keep working. With no holidays for us. But thank God we're here.
All right. Hello, everyone. I didn't know there was going to be so many people here that it was so important, but thank you very much for coming. My name is Antonio Cenge. I was born in July 29, 1942, and I come from a small town called San Donato Valcomino. The second part is very important because in Italy we have 8 towns with the same name. So unless you specify Valcomino, chances are you get lost, you go somewhere else, okay? Anyway, I came on December 11th, 1964. I finished my school in August 1964, and they called me in December, and I came. Going back to the town. The town is right at the foot of a mountain chain, and it's near Abruzzo, but it's not, my region is not Abruzzo, it's Lazio, okay? We are the last town in the region of Lazio, which is about 85 miles east of Rome and about 90 miles north of Naples. It's a town of 2,000 people. It used to be 6,000-7,000. But because of the poor condition and the lack of work opportunity in the town, a lot of people left, and I don't blame them. I came with the ship like this gentleman next to me. The name of the ship was Leonardo da Vinci. It was a brand new, beautiful ship. To me, it was like a cruise almost. We had great time. The food was outstanding, and we played all kinds of games and whatnot. It was a very, very interesting trip. A good thing that the Atlantic Ocean was not mean to us, so the trip was pretty pleasant. Anyway, we got to New York, and because the rest of my family was already in this country. I was left behind because I wanted to finish school. And when we got to New York, we got off the boat, we got in the car, my brother-in-law came to pick me up, and we got on the West Side Highway and started to drive toward the Hudson Parkway and then the Sawmill River Parkway. And it was December, so naturally a lot of people had put up their Christmas lights on. And to me, made such an impression that it seems like a fantasy land, because in Italy, I hadn't seen that. First of all, it was not used. Second, we couldn't afford to put up Christmas lights. We could barely afford bread.
Right.
Because I was, as I said, I was born in 1942, smack in the middle of World War II. And thing was, I cannot begin to tell you how bad it was. I wish I had more time to give you an idea. But anyway, we, as I said, we got on the Sawmill River Parkway. We drove to Pleasantville, New York, which is in Westchester County, New York, where my parents were renting a house. And I came with the idea of staying maybe a month or two, visit with my family, and then eventually go back, because I had a couple jobs lined up. Because I had, I just graduated from a technical institute, and I had knowledge about metals, different kind of technologies and processes and stuff. But anyway, I didn't go back right away, because right after I came, I met my wife. Things got complicated. And anyway, we got married a year later. We had three kids, right? She had three kids right away. That was a bad planning on her part. But we managed. Anyway, I looked for a job, and my English, I had studied 3 years of English and 3 years of French. My English was not fluent, but I knew the grammar and verbs and all that, but my pronunciation was not that great, so I looked for a job, and I had a hard time. I ended up working for the Reader Digest in Pleasantville, unpacking and packing books. For 3 months, I didn't like that. I thought I could do better than that. So through my sister, she was living in New Jersey, she knew somebody in Newark, New Jersey, that had a machine shop, big machine shop, and I was able to get a job there. So when I asked how much they were going to pay me, they said $1.25 an hour. And at that time, I guess, was the going wages, or they took advantage of me. And but anyway, they put me to work on this huge machine, a jig boring machine. And in order to work on that machine, you had to know trigonometry to figure all the angles and stuff on the drawings. And I was able to do that. So I asked my boss, I said, why you gave me this job right away? I give it to somebody else. I said, there aren't too many people that can run this machine. I said, in that case, why don't you give me a better pay? Because your English is not good enough. I said, am I doing the job? He said, yes. So what does it matter if my English is not fluent? I guess they took advantage of me a little bit for a while. I lasted for a year, I got tired of it, and I went back to Pleasantville, New York. I went to work for a company that made semiconductors. I don't know if you're familiar with very, very fine wire made out of gold, pure gold, that we supplied to the electronic industry. And I was there for 5 years. It was a very interesting job. And then daddy wanted to give me a raise, so I moved. I went to another job across the Hudson River in Nyack, New York. And there I met this young guy from northern Italy near Verona. And he was a very good tool and die maker. And he spoke very well Italian, and we used to have lunch together. And he started to talk about starting something on his own, some kind of business. And he said, are you interested? Well, I said, of course I'm interested. But I have no money. I have three young kids. I have a mortgage payment, so I have no money to invest. He said, I have the same problem, but my in-laws have money. They are willing to lend us $35,000 to start something. That's fine, I said, I'm interested. So we rented a 2,000 feet building in Brewster, New York, which is a town, a small town of Route 84. And we rent this building, we bought some equipment, and we start this business making giftware items. I don't know if you're familiar with those items, made out of metal mostly, like pewter, sterling silver,
brass, copper, and gold plate and silver plate. The problem is that Brewster was such a small town, we had a hard time finding the right people to do the job. So eventually we moved to Meriden, Connecticut, where there was a company, International Silver, a huge company, that did basically what we were doing. So it was easy to find specialized people. So we were there for 26 years. We grew the business, and then my partner, he was 74 by then, he decided he wanted to retire. And we tried to sell the company. We didn't find a buyer. So we merged with a company from Massachusetts, from Taunton. That's why I am in Massachusetts. We moved the equipment to Taunton. I didn't like the move because my partner was very hard to deal with. He didn't get along with the people. So he decided to go back to Connecticut. And I said, since my daughter lived in Franklin, I decided to stay. I worked there a couple more years and then I retired. And I have three kids, two girls and a boy. As I said before, my youngest daughter lives in Franklin. She has three kids. My son lives in Connecticut. He has three kids. My oldest daughter lives in North Carolina in a small town near Cherry Point. And so here I am. I live in Bellingham. My wife's name is Cecilia. She's not Italian, she's Colombian. And my family was very disappointed when I got married because I married, somebody that was not Italian. But eventually they got to know her and they liked her. And after 57 years, we're still together. We have 9 grandkids. Everybody's healthy, thank God. And we're getting old. I'm 83 years old. Fairly healthy. I have my few problems here and there, but I can't complain.
Thank you. I'm Al Pizzi again, and my memories of Italy, I think was our discussion topic, are different in that I was very young when I came here. Before I get to that, I just want to thank all of you for being here today and hearing our stories, particularly a lot of the younger people here who maybe aren't quite aware of some of the sacrifices that people had to make along the way, the decisions that they had to make to move their families, traumatize their existence. At one point, I'm an only child, so my mother, my father, and I were on 3 different continents. My dad, after World War II, the life there was very difficult, as you heard from everyone here today, and I won't get revisit that, but it was difficult when World War II took place, and post-World War II, it became really impossible for most people, and he described that well. My father went to Venezuela to make a living, so he sent some money back to my mother and I. We didn't see him for 5 years subsequent to that. What I remember as a child, the very bright sunshine of the day and the absolute darkness of the evening. So in my story, and I'll pass this along to Mike, light is a very important experience because we didn't see that kind of intensity of light in the evening. It was absolute still and dark. Not that people weren't joyful and happy or whatever. Their life existed, working, get home, eat, they went to bed because they didn't get up early the next morning. We were in the midst of, we were hamlets, so very small groups of people, basically family, it was described. People moved in, they get married, the wife moved in with the father's, with her husband's family. And that's the way they existed. I'll get back to my arrival. I'll pass this on to Mike.
Oh, thank you. My name is Big Al. Same thing, I came from Santa Maria de la Molise, and Santa Maria de la Molise was in the valley. And what we had for surrounding towns, we had, I'm sorry, Candalupe, We had Machiavelli, we had Sondage, we had Machiavelli, not Machiavelli, Frizzolone. Anyways, we were in a valley and our land was very fertile. So of course, what did we do? We were farmers. Pretty much that's what happened. I like to talk about the school systems. I went to the third grade in Italy. I had the same teacher for 3 years. She was about 4 feet tall, the meanest bitch I've ever met in my life. Pardon my language, but she would have la baguette, and la baguette is a ruler. And at one point, my oldest brother came home with his hands bleeding. Okay, and my parents couldn't do anything about it, because if they did, take him out of school. Okay. So what would happen? You probably go from first grade to the third grade, and okay, you're not smart enough, go do some farming. If you went to the fifth grade, you should be able to read. If you went from first to third, you should at least be able to read and write. If you went to the fifth grade, then what you're pretty bright, you know? Well, maybe you could do a little better than farming. But if you wanted to continue your education, you would have to go out of town to a city somewhere or learn a trade. In most cases, what would happen was that you would try to learn a trade, serve an apprenticeship, or what else you would do is go and try to become a priest. Okay, that was very common a way of getting your education. And I had two cousins that did that, but never did become a priest. And I did have a brother who was learning, my brother Dominic was sort of an apprenticeship to be a carpenter. And my grandfather used to say, I want to die when Ming makes my casket and Frank says the mass. Well, my grandfather should still be alive. Okay. Anyways, that's the education. My two grandfathers, Angelo Colacci and Dolorado Narducci, in the 1920s, ended up going to Conneaut, Ohio. Now, when they were there, obviously they had to leave their family behind and went there. And when they got there, they were giving away citizenships. Now, my grandfather on my father's side said, what do I need that for? I'm going back to Italy. My grandfather, Colacci Angelo, thank God, said, I think I'll take that certificate. So he took that certificate, went back to Italy, and when my mother was born, she automatically became a citizen, okay? So I thank God for my grandfather. As far as the family and so forth, there were 9 people in the family. Now, what did my father do to get everybody out of there? He was a farmer, and everything you grew, you pretty much ate. And he would go to La Feria, which is a fair, and trade a cow, trade a donkey, trade a goat, and so forth. And somehow, he ended up getting us all out of there. But it was tough to feed 9 people. So what do? Hey, the oldest guy, he's 18 years old, go to Australia. The second oldest guy, he's 18 years old, go to Niagara Falls. Then my mother, okay, she left my younger sister, which was about a year and a half old. She left her, oh, there she is, waving in the back over there, right? And she came to America. A few months after that, my older sister, my two brothers, joined her. And then in September of the same year, me, my father, and my younger sister arrived in Franklin. My sister was 2 years old on the ship. Now, who took care of her? This 9-year-old kid took care of the two-year-old, okay? So anyway, I got kind of scared when I got here. I was 9 years old, they put me in the first grade. I kind of resented the fact that I was in the first grade, but then the following year, I skipped second grade and went to the third grade, which, okay, I'm catching up to the kids that are basically my age. But through the years, believe it or not, I resented the fact that I wasn't with kids that were my age. Okay, I was 2 years behind them. But I didn't realize until later on in life that was actually a good thing. First of all, I probably wouldn't have been able to keep up with the studies. And if, as far as sports was concerned, if I had to compete with Alex, all right, I probably would have never have made any of those teams. So I competed with kids that were 2 years younger than me, and because of my size and so forth, I was able to compete, and I learned a lot in sports. I learned my love of sports. Now, what did I do for work? Pick apples, weed gardens, I don't know, started construction, became a home builder. Okay, and that's pretty much what most people did when they got here. But the other thing, when I was a kid, I moved into 57 Washington Street, which was a corner of Washington Street and Worcester Street, the best neighborhood in the world. And we had this ruthless gang called Washington Street Gang.
Marauders, yeah.
We were awful, absolutely awful. We would raid gardens, throw apples and snowballs to the trucks that went by, steal ice from the milk truck, you know? We were just absolutely awful. And sometimes we would even challenge neighborhoods to sports or anything else. Most of the time we won. To this day, we're still a little bit of a gang, but there's a few people missing. And if you want to see who was on the gang, just look at that plaque over there. It has a lot of names of our gang. Okay. Anyway, now the change in neighborhoods. As far as changes in neighborhood nowadays, what I see is it's totally changed a lot of ethnic groups, which we were ethnic, obviously, but the duties, the jobs, and other things have changed. You know, at one time the Italians did all the masonry. Next thing you know, the Portuguese were doing all the masonry. Now the Brazilians are doing all this. Anyway, so I see a lot of changes like that. And of course, the population has really changed as far as that's concerned. And then the structures, the buildings. Who would ever think? Look at the senior center. Oh my God, you know? Who would even think about building something like this? Okay. And then, I'm sorry about this. All right, and then, of course, some of the things that we went into, construction, businesses, teaching, law, medical, military. Listen, the mafia movies, okay? Don't pay attention to those mafia movies. Those are made for entertainment. That's not who we are. Excuse me, I have to look over. Let me tell you some of the local models that we should pay attention to and heroes of my time. First of all, I start with my grandfathers. My grandfather was smart enough to become a citizen, okay? Then, of course, my mom and dad, and of course, my family, my brothers and sisters. All right. My Uncle Tony Galacci and his wife, Aunt Florence Arcaro, they took my mother in when she came here. Shortly after that, she took in three teenagers, my two brothers and my sister. Shortly after that, me, my father, and my sister arrived. We lived on the corner of Union and Carter Street. There was a tenement house there. I don't remember if it was like three families, six families. The Bullican family used to own that house. We lived there for maybe a year and a half, and my father bought 57 Washington Street. Now, how he did it, I can't tell you. About four and a half years after that, my father paid for 57 Washington Street. Amazing, okay. I have to talk about the people that influenced me. My first grade teacher, Mrs. Passigan. She spoke a little Italian, and without her help, I don't know what I would have done. Anyways, another one I want to mention. Right there, this young lady, Rose. She took an interest in me and played either soccer or kickball with me. I remember that to this day. Okay? People that influenced me. Tony Pizzini, my junior high coach. If it wasn't for him, my love of sports probably would never have happened. To this day, I have a love of sports like no one else. At this age, I'm still playing softball, and I even get out and play a little golf now and then. Eddie Galacci. I was playing CYO basketball, and I got a little bit out of hand. Well, when I got to school that Monday, he kind of took me aside. Listen, I'm going to teach you about sportsmanship. I'm going to teach you about life. And to this day, I try to use that. I do use that. I'm sorry, I have to keep looking. Okay. John Zapatelli. Louis Carlucci, who was a war veteran, World War II veteran. Right? He had to leave here and go fight against his people. Imagine doing that. Now, they were responsible for my mom and dad buying 57 Washington Street. Anyways. A couple of years ago, I had to go and get make some hoses for my tractor. And I went to this gentleman, excuse me a second. Yeah, sorry. I went to this gentleman who made hoses downtown, Mr. Landry. He says, "Where do you live?" I says, "Well, I'm in Medway, but I grew up in Franklin, 57 Washington." He says, "Oh, that house." He says, "I helped build that house." I said, "What?" Yeah, he says, "I worked with my uncles. I helped them build that house there." You know, just ordinary people that I still remember. Olinto Galacci, his dad. He opened up a business, fed the neighborhood with good food and supplied a lot of jobs. Amazing. Gino Galacci, the Union Cafe, of course. Gino Galacci, same thing. He wasn't afraid about advancing. When he was working in the mill in Walpole, he used to go and take English classes with the high school kids. He wasn't bashful. He learned how to speak English, opened up this wonderful Rome restaurant whose kids run and so forth. Same thing, fed the neighborhood, supplied a lot of people who work. Peter Ferrara, a market right in the corner there, came from Canada, from Italy to Canada, and he told me all sorts of stories about what happened in Canada, what happened in Italy, and how it was very important for him to improve his standings and his life, and he did, okay? My brother-in-law, Albino Calucci. And there's one other person, Alex Pizzi, my hero, right? My gumbar. There's one other person that I want to mention. Biagino Taddeo. When I was in high school, I used to work at City Mills. And I used to go from school, and I used to work the 311 shift. Then one day, Biagino Taddeo, just an ordinary Italian, said to me, this gentleman over here from Woonsocket came up to me and said, hey, how do you people do it? You know, I've been here my whole life. You guys just got here. You own a house. You own a car. How do you do it? Gino looked at him and said, remember the other day when the boss asked you if you wanted to work overtime? What did you say? Well, I said no. Well, guess who took it? All right? Pretty good advice. Work for it. That's all. Work for it. Let me get my place. Of course, this is really near and dear to my heart. Our Vietnam veterans, our Vietnam, Franklin's Vietnam boys who made the ultimate sacrifice. All right. One in particular, Johnny Pasquantonio, a very good friend of mine. Now I want to talk about my new heroes. Okay. Now, my family went from my mother being deprived a formal education. My father went to the third grade. And this is the result of it. Great-grandson, MIT teacher. Imagine that. Great-grandson, cinematography in Hollywood. He's making movies. Granddaughter, my granddaughter, she's working on her doctorate degree in forensic science. Plus, she makes wishes come true. She owns an ice cream shop. She finally made my wish come true. Okay, my grandson, possible scratch golfer. I'm still working, I'm sorry. Bobby Vozella. Keeping the art of making wine a science and a wonderful looking business. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Phyllis.
You're welcome.
We need it.
I'm proud of
them. And keep the Italian.
Very proud of them.
All right. And you should be.
Yeah.
The place is called La Cantina. If you want to go have some real good wine, please go there. I'm almost done.
Okay.
A little more. I'm sorry. My only regret, I wish I had made Italy more part of my life. I was busy trying to make a life and so forth, and I always used to hear all these negative things about it, okay? If I have some advice, make it a little more part of your family and be proud of your heritage, support it, and be there for it, okay? But there's a big but. Defend and love this country. Take whatever it has to offer. Take the opportunities. There are a lot of opportunities, a lot of things out there that you should take advantage of. Please do. There's no better place in the world. As much as I loved Italy and all that, this is my home, and this should be everybody's home. If I can go back to just heroes, one more thing, okay? And I'll be all done, honestly. I was 16 when I met this 15-year-old Lebanese young lady.
Does Mary know about this?
Not yet. And we've been together for a while. She's been my backbone. She's been my everything. She's been my life. Ask my children about mom. Ask the grandchildren about the greatest grandma in the world. Okay? Now, my in-laws, Joe and Lucy Borak, my mother likes to say you came all the way from Italy to take my daughter out of here. Well, that wasn't totally true, because we moved in with them and we were here for 50 years. So she really never left. She wouldn't go over the Charles River to Franklin. Okay. So anyways, I thank you folks for listening to all I have to say. This is so wonderful that we had a chance to actually get it out. Okay. Thank you very much, Gigi. I think I'm all done.
Excellent. Thank you. Now I'd like to open it up for questions. Anyone have any questions for anybody on the panel? Oh, that's funny.
You said enough.
Well, I would like to call on Al then, because he kind of got, I think he didn't quite finish his things he wanted to say.
It's not a matter of my finishing. It's to give homage and really credit to all the people who made our trip here possible, made our lives possible. I held up Mike's grandfather. This was my grandfather on my mother's side, Peter Colucci, brought us all here. They were the ones that received all the indignations of prejudice, so that we could then assimilate into this country's wonderful heritage. I didn't have the same experience in that. I started here in the first grade. I was totally assimilated by the end of the first grade, I think. And I'm eternally grateful to the people that I encountered along the way to do that, as well as this country, which gives you the opportunity. You, as Mike indicated, you have to then take advantage of that opportunity. No one else is going to land at your feet. You have to take advantage of that opportunity. I just want to, when I came here, as I indicated, my mother, my father, and I were on three different continents. My mother came in the wisdom, the eternal wisdom of the Italian government, couldn't send us here together. We had to go separately. She came here a month before I did. My father was in Venezuela, and I came on the Andrea Doria. That trip took 7 days, and I was a seven-year-old child by myself, virtually, on the Andrea Doria. The crew, fortunately, took pity on me and embraced me and took care of me. But I don't know if you recall my thoughts about light, and getting to this country, arriving at Worcester Street, living with my cousin Dora and her family for a while. By the way, my mother and I moved 7 different times in 1 year, okay, that first year. They never moved again. They stayed in the same house forever. But that's where we started. Then we went to live with Gino and his family for a while. My mother took care of Gino and the girls. While his parents worked. So the light that I'm talking about is when I arrived, I fell asleep. I saw my mother, I got off the ship, and I was exhausted probably, and I know we took the train because my grandfather was working for the railroad then. He was able to take the train into New York City. I don't remember anything from the time I was picked up until I got to Worcester Street. And it was December 22nd. All the Christmas lights were on. And to go from a place where there was a lot of darkness, there was no electricity, no indoor plumbing, none of that. And Eddie, you had four bedrooms? and to see those lights, I still, to me, when I see red and green lights, you know, at Christmas time, it always harkens back the memories of that first and bright lights that I saw as a seven-year-old child waking up from a sleep, and the whole world is lit up. So that's what my first impressions were of this country. I don't know what else I can add than to say Please appreciate, as Mike said, what this country has to offer. Yeah, we got issues, but please understand that nowhere in this world is better than where we are right now.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you all.
One more time, I'll ask again for questions.
Yeah. So I think it was Eddie said that after World War II in Italy that you weren't allowed to work the fields anymore.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
After World War II, you were not allowed to work in the fields anymore? Is that the question?
Yeah.
You were not allowed to work in the fields after World War II. Why?
During the war, we had two bridges in Italy, one going over a railroad, and one going over a road. They constantly bombed those two bridges, never hit them, and the bombs came pretty close to our homes. And one time he even blew the huge doors off the hinges. And plus there were soldiers in the area, booby traps. And so my mother, I can still hear her, if you see a water, don't touch it. If you see a pen, don't touch it. So with that fear, you weren't comfortable going out, and they didn't want you to go out and plant your seeds or harvest. And so we had to, if you were fortunate enough to have build enough food to last for that time, you were okay. If not, that's when the town comes in, and then people will help each other.
I have a question for
that's
you.
The only way you survive is to help each other, and otherwise you
thank you.
Do I answer it?
Yep.
Okay, Mike has a question.
Eddie. Oh, wait, it's for Eddie. Leave it for Eddie.
Oh, okay.
Eddie, along that line, why don't you talk about your brother being in Special Forces, all right? And not only that, he walked all the way from one place to another. That's a very interesting story.
My brother, you talk about my brother, he was in the Italian Army during the war.
Special Forces.
And when he was in the elite of the Italian Army, if you've seen pictures of these soldiers with a big plumage coming down the side, that's called Bersaglieri. He was one of those. And he would ride a motorcycle with a machine gun fixed to it. Well, anyway, when things changed, Italy was no longer with Germany. Germany figured, well, gotta do something. All these soldiers are gonna come against us. So what they did is, they said to them, my brother and the unit, we're gonna move. Put all your weapons here, we're going to move, and put them in the bus cars. And the next thing he knows, he's in Poland, Mauthausen, which is a German concentration camp. You hear a lot about Mauthausen.
He was
there for 18 months.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to or not.
And when the American forces freed the prison, they didn't say, well, what's your name? We'll put you on a bus. We'll put you on a bus and take you. Telemarketing. Anyway. And we'll take you home. That didn't happen. Here's the door. And so I don't know how long it took him to come from Poland to central Italy, and he didn't have a car, a motorcycle, a bicycle, a horse, and nothing. So he walked, and of course it took a long time, and he was crying for food along the way, doing menial task for some food, you know, to survive. Eventually he made it back. And my uncle was prisoner in Africa, And that's why the house was full of women, except this guy.
Any other questions? Before we wrap up,
Gina, can I say something?
Yes.
Okay. Before we became immigrants, the United States, wherever you go to, we went to, you had to have a sponsor. And the sponsor had to guarantee you, and they guarantee your survival. They had to guarantee your job, a place to stay. They more or less took responsibility for you to survive when you came here. The government says, well, nothing to do with it, you take care of them, otherwise they can't come. And so we had a sponsor. Before even that took place, we had to pass a physical exam. You had to pass the exam if there was something wrong with you, And you had to be 18 years or younger, not married, not served in an armed force or somewhere, so you were not eligible. That's the only way you could come here.
Eddie, we'll wrap it up. I just want to add one more thing. I appreciate all Mike's accolades about our living on Washington Street and the terror that we caused. We had a group of guys that, I loved all these guys that lived on that street. We played football, baseball, hockey, basketball. We just loved being outdoors, which you don't see much anymore, nor do you see the kind of affection, I think, at least that's my impression, that people have, young people have for one another, that carry it through the rest of their lives. We had a baseball field in back of my parents' house. In the middle of that field was a huge rock. That was second base, okay? We had to work around it. When we kind of closed shop and we went our different ways, we decided that we would pay some tribute to that field. And I took this rock from the field and I wrote this on it in tribute to the boys of Washington Street. Although none of us made it to the Hall of Fame, Todd of second base did. For the love of the game, friends forever.
Okay, 2 final thoughts. One is, Jillian here would like to make a short statement. Then after that, I'll wrap it up.
Thanks, Gina. Hi, everybody. If you don't know me, I'm Jillian. I work here at the Senior Center. I handle all of our programming and stuff like that. I'm so excited at the turnout of this event. It's absolutely wonderful. I just wanted to do a quick reminder. If you have a Senior Center little card when you sign in, please sign up for programs like this. We actually only had 6 people signed up. I thought we weren't going to get a big turnout. I'm so glad that wasn't the case. But please feel free to sign up. You can sign up online. You can do it by calling us. You can just stop by the front desk and chat with Mary. Any of those options, we can sign you up real quick. If you are not a member of the Senior Center and you're interested in becoming one, please do. But also, you can just call us and let us know, hey, I'm a guest, I'm not a member, but I do want to come to this event, and that way we can put it in as guests. And it just helps us to make sure we've got enough seating and everything. But I'm really glad of the turnout today. So thank you all for listening to me, and thank you, Gina.
Thank you, Jillian. The last thing I want to say before closing up is, there are a number of photographs and other items up here. I would like to invite you all to come after we stop filming. You can come in and take a look at some of these items, as well as speak with, if you have individual questions for the panelists. I'm sure they would be happy to answer your questions. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll wrap it up.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.